What did you tell him?
Reception. He told me, he said, man, this is not my kind of politics. This isn't the way I like to do it. He said, I'm sorry, I'll try to make it up to you.
Was it to be presumed then if he did it, he could only have done it under directions of Nixon?
The Watergate permitted to reelect the Creek organization. That's where that stuff was coming.
Yeah, but if he felt differently, couldn't he appeal to the president?
I'm sure a lot of people did appeal to the president. I went to the White House to get my pictures taken with the president. All the candidates were going through there. And my pictures disappeared. Mr. LaRue's in the White House at this point, so the only thing I can say to LaRue, the only thing I can point at is LaRue just picked up my doggone photographs and pictures. I had some earlier pictures, and I've been with the president and the public education stuff, and with the governor's emergency council and things like that, so we use older stuff.
How does this behavior affect the Republicans in this state?
They're both ways. They understand, they accept, and I've explained it to the rank and file Republicans. This is pragmatic politics. We were unknown. And if you can't...
But how do you explain to a party...
When you're zero and you're growing, you're going to have to prove yourself before you're taken for...
Okay, but the Republican Party in the South is basically ideological. Mm-hmm. How do you explain something like pragmatic politics to them?
After 13 years of building a two-party system in the South, the Republicans, the true Republicans in the South, they're not ideologists. They're just realists as much as they can be. They've had to deal with the cold political structure that they're enmeshed in, and they regret very much that the president's advisors or the president himself chose this kind of strategy. We think they postponed for a long time, maybe, the emergence of the solid National Republican Party. We do know this, though, that the only thing that's going to shake the two-party system in this country is probably going to be the South, because the Republican Party and the rest of the United States is in one hell of a mess right now, and the only place that's got any real strength and any basis is right in South Carolina.
On one hand, you say the party has suffered a blow from that, but on the other hand, you say it's the hope of the Republican Party in the South. Can you explain? Can you think a little bit ahead as to how this is going to happen?
The Republican candidates and Republican leadership of my party, this is just testing us. It's just a damn bath fire we had to go through.
What was Clark?
If we're legitimate politicians, we can take it and we can build on it. And I think we are. I feel quite tough. And I believe that it would be nice to order. Be elected. It'd be nice to already be in office in about triple the quantities that we are right now. But we're not.
How do you plan to build the party in this state?
People like me don't just can't think like hell and work like hell and speak like hell and articulate the philosophy of this party and educate. Every time I can talk to a student group, I've got about, you can look at my calendar there in a minute, I'm going to go and talk and tell the story, and it's getting through.
Are you going to field statewide candidates in 1975?
Hell yes. You're going to see one of the most exciting campaigns in Mississippi's history.
You're going to run for governor?
I'm 99% there.
And you're going to put somebody else
I hope 20-30% of legislative candidates.
But and all the
I'm
statewide?
I'm going to proselyte every doggone decent candidate I can put my hands on. And that's what I'm doing, generate.
You think that's going to be the way to build it?
That's part of it. You can't do it without candidates. We put up 100 mayor candidates last year, and we won 50 of them. We should have had 500 of them.
Anything else you're going to undertake?
I don't think we'll be in the real political mainstream until we've got a United States Senator. Arkansas ain't got one yet. It's had a Republican governor, and it's not there yet. Louisiana's not there yet. The governor comes and goes. He makes a dent, and then you lose the governorship, and the dent disappears, that type of thing. But once you get one of your senators, Republican senator, the first Republican senator in Mississippi, will just drive a peg in the ground so deep you'll never be able to take it out again. The two-party system will be here.
Yeah, but that's a few years off yet.
Well, all things happen in politics. So, Benny Johnson found himself running for governor, getting whipped and running for Senate. okay, Carmichael, if he is what he's trying to be, a tough, doing his homework politician, then maybe it'll fall in my ear. Trent Lott may come in behind there, Thad Cochran, or somebody else that we've got. I'd say right now we've got two or three people that would probably run for governor if I don't already. Governor candidates that are looking good. And just the only reason they won't run is because they don't want to get whipped by me if we're running a primary or something like that. I'd like a primary. And John Bell's talking about running. He's welcome to run as Republican. He and I can run a primary in a minute. I doubt if he is now. But he was thinking seriously about it about a year ago, thinking about converting Heather. And I've been proselyting. I've tried to get Charlie Sullivan and all of them to come on and be Republicans. They are basically. Hold on a minute. Let me run down and look at this car.
Okay, stop sitting here. Think about building the party in the next 10 years. And fielding candidates is obviously one way to do it. How about building organization or finance or other things?
I've got 7,000 people in my mailing list. That little stack over there. When I come back, here's a couple more right here. They're doing it. You got to put the party in the right perspective. A political party has two functions. In the county level, its main job is to take care of the business of politics, like an appointment to an advisory committee or something like the patronage thing. The other thing that the county executive committee does is that just simply certifies candidates. And you got to have political clubs and organizations like that. Now, the Mississippi Republican Party and the Mississippi County Executive Committees and things like that, they've tried to function as a social organization and as a political body. And we are generating something new out of that. We're generating the Hinds County Republican Club and the Gulf Harrison County Republican Club. And these have got great strength. They're down on the coast. I talked to one group down the other day that 80 people in attendance for just a business meeting of the Harrison County Republican Club. When you boil it down simply, the 25% of the state of Mississippi, the voters that identify themselves Republican, their job is to generate candidates through the political system. It's the candidate's job to generate their money, to generate their support, and to speak out on the issues and identify ideology. And I'm one of the ones that generated.
So you think the finances and the organization follow after you get the candidates?
I think the successful candidate can get his money. See, a lousy candidate or a nice, sweet candidate or something else like that, if that rascal can't go out and ask for money, and he can't raise his own funds and can't generate his own staff, he ain't got anything yet. And now what we're doing is we're birthing candidates. And we're birthing them in ever-increasing numbers. And they're elected. We put up 100 little mayor races, we win 50. We run for a commissioner in Jackson, we win it.
Why do you only have four legislators?
Because the practical political people, as they went from Mississippi Democrats to independents to Republicans. That's your rolling transition that you see happening in this thing. And most of them are in this middle section, and they'll roll back as well as they'll roll forward. And right now with Watergate and stuff like that, they roll back. Or they stand still, they wait and look like that. Well, most of the political office holders today in Mississippi are sympathetic to me. Now that's a broad statement, but they won't kind of go, they hear what I'm saying a little bit, they won't kind of go with me. But they're waiting to see if I'm tough enough to follow. And they're waiting this, they're checking the Democrat side over here, the true identifiable Democrats, and say, what you got to offer? Who are you generating it like that? And the reason we don't have any more in the legislature is because they haven't been able to get elected that way. If I can show them signs that they can get elected, and I did show them some, then we'll have next year in the state races for the legislature and for the supervisors and for the whole shebang. If I am legitimate in my politics on this thing, I should be able to carry in 20% of the legislature.
You think there'll be challenged? How many off legislative seats do you think will be challenged by Republicans?
I'd say, well, one of my best candidates for lieutenant governor to go with me right now is a high elected official, Democrat official in the state. We've already had a couple of good meetings on the thing, and he's seriously wanting to go with me in Blackfoot. Because I'm going to run again, and party politics are teaching the two-party system, I think. Every Republican candidate running for office next year is my buddy, my friend, and I want him in. I want the people to consider him and give him help like that. There'd be some guys that some of my advisors are going to say, oh gosh, don't get connected up with him. But in giving the people a choice, I want to have, for the first time in their history, next year's slate, I want them to be able to look down a Democrat slate and a Republican slate. And I want them to vote back and forth as they want to, and I want them to be able to pick it up. And I think if as far as we've come, and I believe that the Watergate thing will be fairly well evolved and resolved by then, I think that you'll see some of the most interesting two-party politics in this country, in this state, next year. We're further ahead than Harry Dent and his boys in South Carolina. They're still trying to figure out how to get them a governor and having to woo one and begging and pushing and things like that. And hell, Clark's got 6 or 7 to run if I don't know or think about it.
Is Clark a potential candidate?
I'd say so. You can't stay in politics like Clark is without having that appetite and desire.
What was his role in your campaign?
He's the man that taught me into running. He pushed me like hell.
Did he abandon you? Or did he
really?
Stick with you?
Well, no, he didn't abandon me. He put up money for me in the beginning. He got scared and worried for me during the middle of the thing, like that. And he fought some pretty good tigers for me. And in his way, is he had 3 congressional candidates running. And we were all learning how to fight a major battle.
And how about with the White House?
As put it in Clark's words, we had so little to prove our strengths and abilities that we had to fight for everything we get out of the White House. And Clark's fought many a battle. I'm being considered right now for the Amtrak board to be the Southern representative for the Board of Amtrak. Now, the South's in trouble. We've got a big highway system. We've got a good water network system. We've got little short-haul airlines. And we don't have passenger train service. And we've got a new era of life evolving in this country. We're going back to passenger trains and computer trains. And the South killed its train service. And we got to restore it as rapidly as we can. Now, I want on that board to help get passenger train service back and connect our metro centers in the South. And he's having to fight like hell now to get me on it. Because Senator Eastland's also said that he's not for it. So maybe blocked right there. That's for your book and not for news right at this point. But that's what's going on.
This file right here, the Amtrak file.
If the White House had supported you instead of supporting Senator Eastland, do you think you'd have won?
I've been a senator. They've been, so would,
how about Red
Blunt?
Yeah. What do you think?
All in the world, Nixon said to say, anybody that's got 80% of the popular vote in the South, if he just says, hey, send me some Republicans up here to get this damn Congress straightened out, we'd have gone, phoom.
So why did he do that with Jesse Helms and not you?
You were fine.
Jesse Helms wasn't running.
Bad advice.
Was it because Jesse Helms wasn't running against a committee chairman?
Jesse Helms didn't have Jim Eastland as a close friend of the ex-attorney general. So you put them together, Jim Eastland, Klein Lees, John Mitchell, LaRue, and their buddies. They were all friends.
Didn't they all work together on the shipyard?
I don't know. I think the shipyard being in business or going through its crisis was probably because Senator Stennis helped pull it through it. I think he's more, I've worked with Stennis on several industrial things, and that man is a good, hard, tough, ethical fighter. And they might have played around with the shipyard. I didn't get too much signals on that thing. I do know that.
No, but I meant, wasn't there a nexus between those names you mentioned and the shipyard itself? Didn't Mitchell's firm handle the bonds and so forth?
They were pinning it down, but I also understand that the Reuben Phillips was supposed to get the bond business through and be the, the state representative of the Mitchell Mudge firm or whatever it was, the New York firm and the bond business like that. Also understood that at one point the bond business was moved from the Chicago firm to the New York firm like that.
Do you know whether Nixon played, whether Easton played any role in where that bond business went?
If I were the titular head of the Democrat Party in Mississippi, and there's no if and and about it, that Easton is the political boss of the Democrat system in this state, I expect I'd have a lot of say-so about everything.
Of course, Nixon was in that firm at that time, wasn't he?
No, I think it was later that happened. I think Nixon was already elected president when this thing was, what I'm talking about was going on. It was the latter part of the first administration, first 4 years.
Straightening out the shipyard, but I'm talking about in actually
getting
selling the bonds to get it underway.
I haven't done my homework well. I don't have all the numbers of just who did it. The bond business in Mississippi is a key to the power structure in this state. Who sells it and who's handling it is a very important thing. What law firms have got it, well worth studying. And it's there, so it's a matter of record and it's very obvious to go get it. I'm not going to comment too much on it at this time. I get more homework.
Well, let me ask a question and you can comment or not comment, but do you think there was any connection between that bond business on the shipyard in the mid-60s, which went to Mudge Rose, so forth, and your lack of support out of the White House?
I have quoted LaRue's telephone conversation to me when he found out I was going to run, and you can add to it or subtract from it, whatever you want to do it like that. LaRue was Mitchell's aide and close confidant, and that's been reported dozens of times in this thing. LaRue even walked around smoking a pipe like Mitchell did. And LaRue was the liaison man with Easton. Worked with the team together. It was the relationship of the power structure of the administration. They had to do business, and I'm not trying to excuse them at all, but the White House has to do business during 1969 to 72, has to do business with the Southern conservatives, senators in particular. That was the only way to make up a minority party, to make up a majority party like that. So the Ruse role was probably very significant in that thing. And it's, since it's a double current, the needing to work with the Southern power structure to get them to do administrative things. There was also that flow back to work with them. They formed long, strong friendships. And in Carmichael and the Ruse conversation was that you're going to make everybody mad. You're going to hurt yourself politically. You're going to be wiped out financially. You're doing the wrong thing. I got offered everything from ambassadorships to almost threats during the campaign to withdraw from it. I got them from all directions, all types of things. I had one fine young man here in the state who represents another fine man in the state who came to me and said, would you like to have an ambassadorship to get out? What would it take you to get out? So it was wrong for me to run against Easton. And as a believer in the two-party system, it was damn important that I ran.
You have any regrets about running?
Oh, I love it. I enjoy it thoroughly. I look forward to the next race. I have no regrets at all. I found out that I'm I wanted, this is what I'd like to spend the next 20, 25 years of my life doing. I want to be a political servant. I thought public servant in that case. I want Mississippi to realize what it's got, and they begin to realize it. We evolve in one of the most unusual and interesting societies in this country right now. It really is. It's the next 20 years in Mississippi, if you don't have a good life, it'll be your own darn fault. And it, you can feel it coming up and surface it. When we got an interesting thing just economically, and this, we're in an era of shortages rather than plentiful technology. We've got, on top of these things I mentioned the other day, a while ago, we've got soybeans, we've got cotton, we've got oil, we've got natural gas. Man, everybody's got to have that. And we're beginning not to give it away, we're not to be servants. We're almost like some of the third world countries. We're going to start kind of trading our bauxite for what you got, or like Saudi Arabia or something else like that. We want a decent price for it. And the price of cotton, for example, right now is decent enough that it's pumping millions and millions of fresh dollars into our economy. And if we can just get off of some of this paternalism on our people, if we can get Westinghouse and Volkswagen and General Electric and people like that that have hands working in this state, if we can get them to pay us comparable to what they're paying in other states, and we won't be on the bottom anymore, we'll move up 10 or 15 paces, you know, right up into the system like that. And we don't have to have more industries than we got. We don't have to have more jobs than we got. We got a shortage of people right now.
What kind of a tax policy? If you were governor, what sort of tax policy would you propose?
The tax policy we got right now alone. I think we've got a good tax base. The people are used to it and they can handle it. And if I can get their wages up, we'll generate so much extra reserves we can build just about, or do just about anything that we want. We were creating $100 million surpluses in the last 2 or 3 years because our incomes were finally coming up. We were just being, because of the shortage of people, companies were having to pay better.
How about the problems related to property assessment?
It's kind of moot. It's a minor thing. It's unfair. I'm sitting here in this county paying more taxes per acre, per dollar, than people are down in Clark County. But, you know, it's kind of working with the floats them down at the end of a waterfall. You need to get back up here and work up the top of the doggone stream where the real problem is. And so a lot of them are sitting down here trying to correct all this trash that's generated at the end of the system. I want to go back and work on these basic wages. And I'm not a populist. I'm labeled one. But I want the man and woman that work in this state paid a decent basic wage, and then all the rest of this stuff begins to correct itself. Then we can work with the end result.
What's your view to R&D?
I think the R&D Center's got a workforce pretty well. It's moving in the right direction. It's not really, see, my argument with R&D is just what I just said then, that they're working down at the wrong end of the stream. Let's get back up here and let's make the, we've got a one store chain here in the state that pays its workers $1 an hour because they're exempt from minimum wage. I want to call that booger in and sit down and tell him, hey, let's stop this foolishness. You don't have to do it. And get him to raise those basic wages. And we've got the individual merchants all over the state doing that. If the governor would use his power and persuasion in that area, and if the senators would get on this federal law that makes people make less money at the Navy base here than they do at Pensacola, all of those things are simple and easy to correct.
That you were on the R&D Center, you were saying?
The R&D Center is working with it. It ought to be working where I am. It ought to be working back up here. It ought to be calling in the manufacturers and saying, hey, you've had a good life down here. You've been here for 18 years. U.S. Industries owns this Maywell plant here. They got women who've been working in that plant for 20 cotton picking years, making $1.60 an hour. And that's stupid. They're drawing about the ethical capitalism doesn't do that. You know, human free enterprise doesn't do that. It tries to pay its people better. I'd call U.S. Industries in and say, now look, man, you're drawing $100,000 a year out of that little town over there. You're not even putting any money in the bank accounts in Meridian. And you're still working at people for $1.08 an hour after 20 years. Now get their damn wages up and quit sucking it off to take care of that Pennsylvania plant that you got up there. It's in trouble.
You see the major thrust in it.
R&D can do that.
You see the major thrust of what is needed for the state industrial development with basically capital intensive industry.
Oh, that's a big question, a big terminology for me. Try to put it in another term, say it another way.
Well, what do you see as a single major need in the state? I mean, where do you begin? You say you go upstream.
Yeah. Right, I mean, we have to go back toward the source. And, don't worry at the trash at the bottom of the waterfall. We're again working with the people's pride and with their ideas and thoughts. You've got to work with the merchants of Mississippi, the manufacturers of Mississippi, and you're going to have to prick your conscience to get the hell off of these this attitude of working their people so damn cheap. You don't have to.
Does that mean the state minimum wage law?
I think you can do it without it. I think you can just flat intimidate them into it, or cajole them into it, or jawbone them into it, or whatever it may be. And once you get it started, and once a business, and I practice this in this company, this company is already paying $2 on minimum wage. It's been doing it for a long time. And this company's got hospitalization, retirement plan, sick leave, vacation, all the basic benefits. As a result, all the car dealers in this town got it too. And this company started it right here. And this is what the government can do. This is what the R&D sector can do. And once you, society or social business or whatever they make, once they realize they're doing something that's not nice or wrong or not proper, they start changing. And our industrial foundations, our chambers of commerce, are still saying, hey, you can get them to work for that. And bring them in with that. Now, a lot of it, I'd like to go back to your tax base you asked about a while ago. Again, this is working at the wrong end of that. We don't need to give any industry that moves into Mississippi tax exemptions anymore. Ingalls moved in, not Ingalls, but Standard Oil moved in down in the coast down there. And the damn public school system almost went broke trying to take care of the children. So finally, Standard Oil's conscience start hurting, and they give a gift every year equal to about half of what they would be paying normally in taxes to help support the public school system. Well, legitimate good companies are going to make a lot of money in this city, and they ought to pay the taxes and pay the full price. I'm saying something significantly different in my mind. I hope you're hearing it, of how to get Mississippi up off the bottom of the ladder. And not to turn it into a ghetto state. I don't want it to. I don't see the desire to make Jackson, Mississippi, and Meridian, Mississippi, 500,000 population people. I don't see the desire to just have huge factories and things like that. But I do see the desire that the businesses that are here and the industries that are here will pay us comparable to any place else, so that our kids will quit leaving. And you've got them on the ground that came from down here.
What do you see in the way of race relations?
Excellent. I see the black and white working together better in this state than anywhere else in this state. And I've been in New Hampshire, and I've been in South Carolina, I've been in Vicksburg, Santa Fe, New Mexico, been in California for the Department of Transportation. And, they got problems.
Can I ask you about that? You said 1971 was the last of the races.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to some observers and some Democrats who said the only way the Republicans are going to attract Democrats, going to be able to attract the conservative Democrats, both racially and economically. And the hope is to get those dissidents into the Republican Party. But it'll have to be done very subtly on racial matters. But that will be seen as the alternative.
Well, our spectrum, let me draw that. And I think I'm going to draw it descriptive with that. In the political spectrum, in Mississippi, you take your Democrats. They go ultra-liberal to slightly conservative. Now, at the present time, there's a lot of conservatives in the thing. The Republican spectrum goes like this, to hard conservative over here like this. We've got a lot in this area here like that.
Now, these people on this side of the Democrat spectrum are they're going independent and they're looking at stuff, and they can find much more home in here. Our Republican spectrum, our executive committee here, I can remember one time when there was a black on it and a Ku Klux on it. Buddy, that's a true representative county executive committee when you got it that doggone wide.
But are you talking like conservative in terms of race or in terms of something else?
Race, in Mississippi, conservatism also has a racial overtone. Conservative in the approach that don't super integrate, don't socialize and things like that. Now there's a conservative description of that. And that does fit into the Republican Party. It is still heavily white. And it is bringing in individual blacks. Now, my own definition of the Republican Party is that it is a party of the individuals, not the parties. Many times that's interpreted by Democrats as being selfishness. But you have to work to be a Republican. You have to study because we weren't born into it down here. We didn't inherit it. It just wasn't given to us or anything like that. And the whole South is in that pattern. So the Republican Party is a party of individuals. There is a room for a man that comes in that does not want to mix socially with the blacks. And yet there is, and that's for people like myself, there is not for blacks to come in and work on that same basis. And I've generated, I'd say, a goodly share of a lot of black leaders.
Okay, will the racial thing become more or less important in shifting people from the Democratic to the Republican Party?
Less important.
Less important.
But how about if the two Democratic parties get together and resolve their differences? What's going to be the effect of that?
That's happening rapidly, and Ken Dean may be one of the first ones that will be able to talk to both ends of the spectrum. And that's what the Democrat spectrum is. It's split. There's a piece like this and a piece like this, and they overlap in this thing right here. Dean sits as a liberal, but he sits somewhere on here. And there are people beginning to listen and begin to work across there with each other. They're going to bring together the labor unions of Mississippi, the blacks of Mississippi, the liberal Democrats of Mississippi. They're going to form the typical Democrat group coalition. And I wish it'd hurry up. I wish it'd go ahead and generate them a new state chairman. I'd like them to get organized because I want to fight with them. I'd like to have us. That's exactly the confrontation.
And do you think that's going to result in a party realignment?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there'll be a lot of incumbent Democratic office holders switching to the Republican Party?
That's right. Standing on the line waiting right now. Talking seriously to me about running as a lieutenant governor candidate with me. Now, heretofore, the governor ran, the lieutenant governor, everybody runs independent, you know. They're Democrats, but they don't want to get rubbed off on each other. So I want to put together real slate of candidates.
Don't they also perceive the Republican Party as being able to do a lot more for them than the Democratic Party in terms of raising money, finance, campaign organization?
The Republican Party is the only organized party in Mississippi. And we've been in business a long time, and we've lost many elections, but we've always raised money. And
What if John Bell Williams or somebody like that decides to run as an independent for governor?
He would have the same thing happen to him, Matt McKithen. He'll get his ass whipped. He'll get wiped out. People are independent. The politicians can't be.
But let me ask you this question on realignment.
Even Wallace is going back to the Democrat, right? You follow me?
Yeah.
The politician cannot be an independent. They don't vote for independent. He's not hooked up.
You're independent of the two major political parties.
Now, once in a while, a maverick will get elected, but unless you create a third party that takes over and becomes significant, the independent.
So in this state, you still need the nomination of one of the two major political parties.
And look at Buckley. Buckley's hanging in the air in New York. He's got no mother and father. He's a nice guy. He sits on the Republican side of the House and things like that. And he had to make an alignment to be able to get something done. If John Bell runs independent, I'll have a ball and kidney. Because I want to know who his president is. And I want to know where his federal funds are. And how you get some of them.
If you end up with the two Democratic parties resolving their differences and you end up with a single Democratic party in Mississippi and you're predicting there'll be a considerable realignment and a lot of You're predicting mass defections, am I correct?
No, not mass defections, significant defections, unknown.
But significant in terms of legislature would be how many in numbers?
25-30%.
25-30%. Now, do you expect that to happen even though Senator Eastland is still in Washington? He's still Mr. Grand, I mean, he's still Mr. Big in the Democratic Party. And how about his influence with all these Democratic office holders?
And as long as he is alert and can play his politics, he's going to prevent what I think is going to happen from happening. But he's got horrible odds against him. His age is catching him. His time is passing. And in the next 5 to 7 years, in that time frame, and I'll still be a relatively young man. And the young Republican Party will still be young, I think. We'll have 2 new senators in this state, probably. The laws are almost there on that side. I love Stennis. I'll repeat this to you. I'm not doing it out of any sort of slide maneuvers or anything else like that. That man is a statesman. He does. He is above politics. He's just as good to me as a Republican as he is to Bill Warner as a Democrat. And he plays just as straight with both of us. If it's something to do with promotion or some patronage down here, he'll tell them to come see Gil. That's the way he talks. And so, he'll just pick up the phone and say, Gil, I like him. Can we help him? And I said, Senator, I'll sure try. And that's good party politics. And that's good relationship, I think. And I want to put that 2 cents in there. I want you to understand my feeling about him. But and I hate to see his time pass, because he has made a significant contribution to this new society that I'm talking about down here.
Is there perceived to be a moderate and a conservative wing in the Republican Party?
The interesting thing about the Republican Party is it generates very few hard conservative candidates in Mississippi. It generates, I hope I fit in this spectrum. I'm as concerned about the poor white man as I am a poor white man. I got a feeling if I can get them both a good job, that an awful lot of this other stuff disappears. And I think, now, we're going to have candidates that realize we got 2 million people like that. And I don't see us generating very many hard conservatives. Dr. Ray Lee was a good hard conservative, but he ended up going Democrat because the Republican Party wasn't conservative enough for him. So, I'd say, again, as a party, we are a spectrum. And you can't call it a conservative Mississippi Party.
No, but within the party, is there a more or less conservative wing and a more or less moderate wing?
It may be evolving. There's 2 or 3 factions now. As it gets bigger, as it gets stronger, it's generating internal competition. And a lot of them look at it as splits. I look at it as strength.
You see it as merely a reflection of growth.
Growth, that's right. The fighting for the county, that's the healthiest thing. When they won the Senate seat in Tennessee, the big fight was the fight for the doggone county chairmanship. And a lot of old fat county chairmanship have been sitting there for a long time. Everybody just gave it to them automatically. They woke up the next morning and voted out of office. You're talking about cries and screams of anguish. I had it. Same thing happened last year. We had numerous county chairmanship get in trouble. And there's a letter over there from one fight right now that just came in. And the other faction won. Let me know. This is healthy. This is real good. Clark Reed's, they tried to throw him out. He called me and said, no, what am I going to do? And I was running. He had to run for chairmanship right in the middle of my race, which I didn't like. But Dr. Moore was running for it. And he had to get out and hustle and campaign and seek votes and fight. And it made him a better chairman. That's what's going on. And a lot of the Democrat pundits in the state look on it as a schism or a split. And it's just plain, healthy growth.
Do you and Clark generally have the same views?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Where do you differ?
Clark is, I don't know what I, this is an accurate definition, but he's the writer, William Buckley, and Jim Buckley and I, he would argue, Buckley down in Mississippi would be pretty much what I am. I want to dismantle the federal government. I want to, I am a states writer. I try to be a humanist. Clark has great fear of the minimum wage because he thinks it'll put private business out of work. I don't agree with that at all. Just make private enterprise work harder to stay in business. And he got real upset when I came out for minimum wage. And, I look on capitalism as wonderful, but it'll also work children for 50 cents an hour if you let them. So that's why I believe in certain laws. And, this is one of the areas that we split them. I hope I'm a little bit more of a common man. And Clark is a bourbon of the river planner class. Much more social person than I am. I don't know. I like simpler things.
How much of a threat to the Republican Party's growth in Mississippi is there of having an image of being a country club party?
Well, I hope I'm helping knock that all over the place. And,
is it a hindrance in some areas?
The advent of the blacks into the Republican Party, and we've got some good, sharp, articulate blacks. I hope you interview some of them. And Clell Ward's well we're talking to up in Delta. These are new ones. There's a fellow named Connie Moore here that I helped bring in to the party. He's a sharp man. He's a significant future leader in Mississippi's politics.
Who would you say in the Delta?
Clell Ward. He's a young lawyer up there.
Connie
Moore is an educator here.
I think you got his name.
Yeah, Connie's tough. When I was in Chamber of Commerce here and we were fighting the blacks were trying to demonstrate and things like that, Connie wanted straightened out and ended up to be one of our key leaders.
You ran very well in the counties in which McGovern ran well, which suggests you...
I appealed to a lot of the McGovern supporters. A lot of the,
McGovern supporters in Mississippi being almost all black.
Well, this end of this end of the Democrat spectrum over here, they can't relate to Eastland. Eastland's sitting somewhere way back over in here. I call him a bogus conservative because he's only conservative in certain areas like that, but they can't relate to me.
I was talking to what they're doing.
I was talking straighter.
How do you feel now about Richard Nixon?
I think he's
as leader, as president, and also as leader of the Republican Party.
I'm trying to do what my I'm not a lawyer, and I really feel we got too many lawyers in government. I'm trying to practice what the lawyers don't seem to be practicing. I'm gonna wait and let him be judged. I want the impeachment process. I did the same thing with Agnew. Okay. I didn't judge him until he admitted and until the case was out. Agnew's a crook. I'm sorry.
Why do you keep his picture here?
Because for me to take it down would be for me not to be honest. And I would proud to put it up there. And it's not ethical for me to take it down. I don't know whether you can hear that answer or not. But I'm not going to hide who I am, or what I've been, or where I've been. And this man, one day in a few minutes, after the thing over in Jackson, said that he regretted it. It wasn't his way of playing politics. And he tried to make it up to him. Well, he was very legitimate, and I later on got appointed to the Department of Transportation's advisory committee. I think he played a significant role in getting that appointment. I'm learning a lot in the federal establishment about having it. I'll keep it there. You like to take me like I am, type of thing.
How about Richard Nixon as leader of the Republican Party.
I'm reserving judgment of him right now. His management puzzles the hell out of me. I'm the only one who stood up for him in this city. And I stood up hard and loud and tough in November because I saw him being run off without benefit of trial. I saw him being tried without benefit of evidence. And I started a movement down here of letter writing and petitions and things like that. And it did real well. But Eastland hadn't stood up for him, made no comments on that. Stennis had stood up for him. Montgomery has, to a certain extent. I'm going to stay with him until he's judged innocent and guilty. If he's guilty, then I just have to shake my head and say I'm sorry. But I'm not going to step away from him or back from him as Buckley has or as even go water to a certain extent. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pay the price for whatever.
Why do you feel any loyalty at all to him in view of the way he treated you?
I want to see, that doesn't, because a man treats me one way, doesn't justify me to treat him that way. And that's the way I play the game. I just don't play it that way. And I understand his way. I regret it. And I wish that he had seen the opportunity to build a Republican Party in the South. I think he did like Reuben Phillips did here in Mississippi. Reuben Phillips said we had spent millions of hours on Reuben, thousands of dollars, in building him and building the image and grooming him for state leadership. And he laid the gauntlet down. He put it on the ground. He had no right to do it. He had no right to turn his back on all those that helped build him. I have no right to do it either. If I wanted to switch parties right now or wanted to withdraw from politics, that'd be the lousiest thing you could do. Because we've done this together, we've built together.
What did Phillips do, just withdraw from politics?
No, he turned his back on me. He endorsed Eastland up at the Neshoba County Fair. Right. Up here.